Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Well, here we go, everybody. Hello and welcome to The View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly, and joining me today are The Athletic's Charlie Eccleshare and Jase Moore. Listen, I don't want the programme to become, the podcast to become like Arsenal Fan TV, where every time Spurs lose a game of consequence, there is a massive meltdown. But I'm going to make an exception in this case. I had a massive meltdown after the first leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final.
I'm going to have one now.
James is going to have one now. Look, before you do, James, I'll give you one more chance to paw the ground in anticipation while we get the reasonable point of view from the match reporter for The Athletic. Charlie, what did you make of last night's events at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium?
I feel like I'm very much in the lamb to the slaughter role here of, you know, say something so you could be slapped down.
Mm-hmm.
Last week I went through all the decisions that you were really angry with and offered the counterpoint. I don't think there is a defence as such for not playing Hugo Lloris and playing Gallini. I mean, anyone who's watched Gallini since he's come to Spurs, including and probably most pertinently on Sunday against Morecambe, where he looked so shaky and short of confidence, it was not a decision where, you know, when Gallini then gaffed for the goal, it was like, who could have seen that coming? You know, that's just unlucky on Conte. You know, everyone who's watched Gallini knows he's not up to much. So, yeah, that was a baffling decision. I asked Conte about it afterward. He'd already been asked, and I followed up and said, do you understand the frustration of the fans? Because clearly fans were really, really angry and annoyed about it. So I think that was a really bad call. I think I would have played Sessegnon over Doherty as well. Maybe you could make case for Roddy Skip. Of course you could, because he's been really good. Do I think those would have changed the outcome of the tie? Probably not. But yes, they would have given Spurs a much better chance. And they needed every chance they had, because over the two legs they were battered, quite frankly.
Well, it's arguable. And one more, James. You're coming now to the front of the queue. You notice when you're queuing for tickets, your little man has moved two more spaces to the right. You could argue that without Lloris, Dier, Romero, Skip, Son, and last night I worked out a sixth. I mean, some people
Reguilon.
Say them. Yeah, and Reguilon.
They're missing half the team, and they're not good enough against Chelsea.
All the more
that.
Reasons.
They're
I'm
over half
now
the team.
If you can shove your queue up your ass.
James Moore. The floor is yours. I hope you heard my rant last week. Don't let there be a benchmark.
I mean,
go beyond that.
Charlie, then all the more reason to play as strong a possible team as you can with like three or four players missing for injury.
Mm.
You have to play your first choice goalkeeper. It's a big game against the champions of Europe. You know, you're 2-0 down from the first leg. It's not an insurmountable deficit. It's not like they're 3-0 down, 4-0 down, and you should just bin it off. If you're going to bin it off at 2-0, then, I mean, what does that say about you as a manager? You've got to play your full-strength team. There aren't many players who have won trophies, as we keep hearing, at the club. You've got a World Cup-winning goalkeeper and the captain on the bench in a game against the European champions. We are 2-0 down. It's absolutely laughable that you play that. And you're right, Charlie. It was no surprise to see Gallini chuck one in the first 20 minutes of the game. I mean, it was the most predictable thing I've ever seen. It's like, and I'm sure I've done this bit before, like the first 5 minutes of an episode of Casualty where, you know, like a bloke walks into a barn and starts climbing over a ladder over the top of a combine harvester, and lo and behold, he falls down and impales himself on the thing. And that is a genuine episode of Casualty that I saw as a child. It scarred me for weeks.
It's turned you right against combine harvesters, hasn't it?
Completely against all agriculture stuff. I cannot fathom that decision. I mean, you know, you mentioned Skip and Sessegnon as well, and I think it's fairly well documented now. You know, anyone who's watched Spurs regularly this season will see will have seen that Spurs are a much better team, much more solid team, and much better with the ball, with skipping the team. And given Royale can't attack at all, he won't go around the outside of the fullback, he won't cross the ball into the box at a sensible moment. If you then have Matt Doherty on the left, you can't attack through the left, down the left or down the right. It's all going to have to come through the middle. You're going to become incredibly easy, even easier, to defend against. I just can't fathom. I mean, I don't know whether Sessegnon is still only half fit. I have no idea. Or whether Conte doesn't trust him to play against a team of that standing. I don't know. He hasn't said that I know of.
Even though he was actually really good against Liverpool. Well, there you go. Trent.
But I kind of think the three. I mean, maybe this is being wise after the event, but I really, really don't think it is. And you saw the messages that I sent in that WhatsApp group before the game. If those three players play, who knows what happens? And I'm not saying that if those three players play Spurs, definitely.
No, you're not.
Definitely win the game, let alone win 3-0 that they would have needed to win by 2-0 in 90 minutes and then see what happens in extra time. But it would move the dial enough, I think, for there to be some semblance of belief. If Spurs don't concede that stupid goal in 20 minutes, you know, Chelsea perhaps are starting to sweat a little bit as the game wears on. Spurs then get a... The game is completely different from that point onwards, obviously. If Spurs then get a fluky goal or one of those marginal decisions, that we're all right, but if the play goes slightly differently and then it actually is a onside goal or actually is a penalty and then suddenly, it's 2-1 and then the game is completely different. Completely different.
Look, let me ask a question. I've got an observation about this, but let me ask you a question about this. Either of you can answer this. Afterwards, I presume the gentlemen and gentle ladies of the press asked him why he left out their captain. And from what I've read, the little I've read online this morning, he didn't really have an answer.
Well, he said that Gallini has generally been the cup keeper this season. I know he... And all of this, don't shoot the messenger. I agree with any of this, because... So
very defensive this morning, Charlie.
Well, it's like Conte's shield. He said, basically, before his arrival, Gallini was the guy for cup competitions. He wants to give him chances. Gallini showed himself to be reliable. Again, don't shoot the messenger. Then he made the point that Spurs have to play 3 games in 7 days against Arsenal, Leicester and Chelsea again. I know what you're going to say. Does a goalie really need to be rested?
Oh, no. I talk about his word there. I presume that Lloris is going to play up front in at least two of those games.
Very good. Or maybe left wing back. But, Danny, after that was asked, next question I said, do you understand the frustration from supporters about Hugo Lloris not starting as it's such an important game? He said, but I don't know about this. I repeat, I made this decision and I think that Gallini played a good game. In the first game, we lost 2-0. Today, we lost only 1-0. I think that we have to try and think about situations that are much more important than this, believe me.
What's he talking about? The pandemic there? I mean, what is he talking about? What's the biggest situation?
I think his implication was having a not very good second-choice keeper is the least of our worries.
I mean, I wouldn't say the least of our worries, but maybe it's not the primary worry.
Can I ask you, I hope, James, that you're just warming up. Can I ask you a supplementary question? Charlie, both of you can ask, but Charlie, I'll ask it to you. Obviously, when you do something as regular as this twice weekly podcast, some of your views become repeated. I make no apology for that. That's the way human beings are. What am I going to do? Make stuff up. These super elite managers, there's a dozen of them that float around the world, which Conte is very definitely a card-carrying member. Why do they do these things, which any fool can see is wrong? Because here's my thing. If it comes off, then you are a super elite manager. If the goalkeeper you choose, against all logic, throws one in after 20 minutes, you are not a super elite manager. You are a teenager playing football manager in the front room at home.
Yeah. So,
come on, Charlie. What do you say? What's the question?
Is Conte a teenager playing football manager? No, I don't think so. Yeah, they make these big calls. I mean, I guess there is a combination of things. Often that there are things we don't know about, so he might have felt, and I don't know, I'm speculating, he might have
James,
felt
James, is he paid to know about it, whatever it is he doesn't know about?
Well, I don't know. If he might have detected an imperceptible amount of tiredness or fatigue on Lloris's part, he thought might be a difference maker in these three critical games.
Why didn't he tell me that when he's asked several questions about it?
Is one possibility, because he might feel, I don't want Arsenal, Leicester and Chelsea knowing that our goalkeeper is suffering from this imperceptible to the naked eye, but to my genius eye, lapse in concentration, this slight mental fatigue.
All right.
Or he's doing what you're saying and is making a thinly veiled point to the board. or these people who we put on pedestals are fallible and sometimes make decisions that, because of their own absolute self-belief in everything they do to be correct, which is probably why they achieve what they achieve, they do sometimes make errors. And I think this was an error. I've not said, I don't think anyone is saying is backing Conte that this was the right call. I think he's made a mistake.
I don't think he could possibly have realised how badly this is going to go down. Like, I just don't think you make this.
Well, also,
like,
don't
that.
Think
you
he cares.
That, like, I mean, some of the stuff that was being said about him during the first half of that game, by the way. I mean, not complimentary in the stands.
But I don't think he gives a shit. Why would he? I mean, like, you don't get to where you are as Antonio Conte. The reason he's where he is, and most of us are where we are, is because you don't care about what people who are less informed than you think, and that is the reality.
If he does badly in this job. He didn't get the Manchester United job, right? The Manchester United job was effectively... He was out of a job. The Manchester United job was effectively available because they had that clown Solskjaer in charge for the first 4 months of the season. The Manchester United job was effectively available. Everyone knew that they were going to sack him eventually and that was going to come up, right? If Manchester United had wanted him as manager, he would have got that job. Well, hasn't there been another job? I mean, Barcelona, that came up this season. Was that before or after he came to Spurs? Was it after or before?
After.
But I mean, again, similar thing though, isn't it?
Yeah.
We all knew Koeman was going to get binned at some point in the first half of the season. It was just a matter of time. And this guy was sat there waiting for a job. He's ended up at Tottenham, right? There's a reason he's ended up at Tottenham. It's not because he wants to go to Chick King and have a look around the stadium and do the skywalk or whatever
Chick
else,
King.
Right? It's because all these other clubs decided that he wasn't the manager for them, right? Manchester United decided he wasn't the manager for them. He is at Tottenham. He needs to prove now that he is an elite manager. And I would agree with what Danny said. He is one of the top, the number you said, sort of 7 or 8. I'd probably make that number even smaller, actually, for the group that he's
sure.
in. But he actually has to prove that now with Spurs. It's all very well and good going to Chelsea and winning the Premier League where you've got a bottomless pit of money at Juventus and then at Inter. And then, by the way, throwing a strop at Inter when you realised you weren't going to have a bottomless pit of money anymore. Like, if you're coming to manage a top league sport, it's a completely different thing. You can't have a sulk and chuck an inferior goalkeeper into the team to make a political point in a big game. I'm sorry. You cannot do that.
But that's a separate point. The initial question was, surely he knew how badly this was going to go down with the fans. And I'm saying I don't think that would have been his primary concern. Of course he needs to win games, but he's not going to be thinking, I can't do this because the fans are going to hammer me. He doesn't give a shit. And rightly or wrongly, like, and you might
but
say
the reaction of
that's
fans
bad.
Will always move a dial, right? You know as well as I do, but if the second the fans turn, then the players, that they do start to just, they might be behind, but they will start to turn in the same direction as well. You see it endless, countless times we've seen that. The second the fans turn on a manager. Honestly, I wouldn't be at all surprised if that happened.
Yeah, I mean, but if they get good results in the next three games, which they might well
do.
And
you can get a result on Sunday now.
Sunday's so important.
He's under massive pressure to get a result on Sunday now.
It's okay. He saved Ryan Sessegnon for Sunday. Don't worry about that. Another thing then, this comes in with the way he responded to, I mean, let's be fair, it was a predictable defeat anyway against the champions of Europe, who are suddenly playing with great energy again. It was more predictable once we saw the team, and I was one of those, and I accused him of being a teenager. Of course, I act like a 13-year-old as well, and immediately tweet my dissatisfaction, including a gif from Game of Thrones at the team selection. And then when it goes out, I think, oh, Danny, come on, man. You're 109 years of age. Come on. What about the... I'm going to be careful how I pronounce these things because I know that particularly our colleague Jack likes to get these things right. What about the gobbledygook about Ndombele? What about the Ndombele gobbledygook?
Yeah, I mean that...
What the hell was that?
What was annoying... That was said to Sky and he didn't talk about Ndombele with us. Yeah, I mean, talking in riddles, just really weird and unhelpful. I mean, I think he was saying that his decision, you know, it wasn't like he went rogue. He was backed in what he was saying by everyone at the club.
I definitely saw some people on Twitter last night sort of reading into it, perhaps slightly optimistically, that it meant that he was basically gone, that there was basically a deal on the table or whatever. I mean, that was certainly one reading that I'd seen. I mean, I don't think I'd be quite as optimistic as that being done that quickly.
Because here's the thing then. All right, I'm happy to take more of, not to absorb, like I'm working customer services, but to hear more of James's anger. But then the match finishes. I suppose the pain is made worse by a succession of VAR decisions. You know, they were. I didn't protest they were incorrect, any of them. But you keep getting your hopes up slightly and then they keep getting dashed. After the game, What do we make, Charlie, this is for you initially, because you were actually in the flesh, of the manager's press conference, press comments, whatever he did. And here's the thing. I find it very hard often to decide what people are really feeling when they're speaking, however well, in a second language.
Yeah.
The absolute top 2% of the way we communicate with each other is in nuance that is lost even to the most brilliant speaker of a second language. And so you can never quite tell when the marital row starts, to continue a previous, in fact, it was Charlie who was on about the post first flush of love. And you can't quite tell whether you're being told off for not taking the bins out or whether I'm sleeping with the fitness instructor and your history, right? Because it's done in a second language. But I'll use a word. Maybe it's just the way the man's eyes are hooded. I don't know what it is. It's just sulking. Sulky nonsense after the game. I made a few mistakes. We aren't good enough. I'm happy to hear the truth. But what was the tone of those press comments afterwards?
Yeah, and this is actually a bit of an issue because he does often say things and we're there sort of transcribing it, what have you, and a little bit scratching our heads as to sometimes what he means. And we're not sure if that's because he's deliberately talking in riddles or just because he is doing a very difficult thing, as you say, and speaking in his second language and it being
about important things, yeah.
About importantly, and the minutiae being poured over it. And, you know, if he says one word ever so slightly wrong, that can be a headline. And you have to be quite careful that that is what he means. I mean, he was arguably more sulky and grumpy last week after the 2-0 game. Because that I think, was because it was the first one. And, you know, I think there was a humiliation element to that, being back at Stamford Bridge. I don't feel this game was as bad, and it probably didn't teach us anything that we hadn't learned last week. But yeah, I mean, you know, with lots of this, when you read it, and you could say as well, when you watch the team at times, you wouldn't be amazed if you were told that the manager was in fact not Antonio Conte, but Jose Mourinho. And that is, you know, fairly damning, given how much everyone quickly tired of him. And clearly he feels some disgruntlement about the squad or the group that he has and about the activity or lack thereof so far this month. But none of these things should really be a surprise to him. I mean, he was told that there wasn't going to be much money to spend. He obviously knew this was the squad. And I do think he anticipated things being slightly differently, but I don't think that's really based on anything. I think he's just angry. I think he absolutely hates losing. And what's interesting is that, you know, there have been a couple of times where even against Morecambe on Sunday, we were like, God, he is going to come in and be absolutely raging after that. But he was actually sort of fine. And I think the fact that they'd won meant that he could compartmentalise it a bit. But
well, if you don't like losing, don't take a job in the Premier League. Where
don't play Gallini in goal, mate.
You've
play
got
Lloris.
18 really good teams against you. Yeah, well, obviously, you have some control over your own losing fate there. James, do you want to... Have we come to the end of discussing the actual match? Because we've got a lot to get through, transfers and Arsenal as well. Or do you want to make what in legal terms would be a closing statement?
I didn't actually think they played that badly, despite all of that, really. I mean, I thought the first kind of 3 to 5 minutes, they were under the cosh a bit. But then after that, it felt like they grew into the game up to the goal. Then they had another sort of 10 minutes maybe of being having completely lost confidence. But other than that, I kind of thought they were in the game, weren't they? I mean, obviously, look, I Chelsea were all 3-0 up by that point and very comfortable. But I mean, I guess the frustrating thing is, you know, and as Charlie said before, you know, Chelsea didn't ever get out of third gear over 180 minutes of that tie. And while obviously you would think if Spurs had played better, Chelsea would have been able to up it. We've all seen matches sometimes where teams just don't start well. They're playing in first gear. They got, you know, we saw this a little bit with Spurs against Morecambe, and that easily could have gone the other way. You know, it's, the teams don't start well. They're playing in first gear. They go back, they concede a goal, and then suddenly everything changes. And that could have happened in this tie if Spurs had asserted themselves in either game a bit more.
There was a moment, and of course the defeat was raw. I was still mulling over the three VARs, all of which were technically correct. And a thought went through my head, Charlie and James, just watching the press conference, his comments one-to-one, not the big press conference afterwards. And a part of me said, I don't want to be apocalyptic, you won't be here by May, will you? Is that completely insane?
No, I sent a WhatsApp message along the same lines during the first half of the game.
Charlie, you're looking at the pair of us as though we're like...
I would say it wouldn't be a surprise if, rather than definitive statement,
Oh yeah, I wouldn't be stunned if that happened. And last week when he was giving his press conference, there were a lot of murmurings of like, this feels awfully like Conte in the 2017-18 meltdown season at Chelsea. I think he will be. What's so weird about all of this is that not sound all Theresa May after the 2017 election, but in the Premier League sense,
you always say that.
Yeah. I know. I'm always channeling my inner May. Nothing's changed in the Premier League. I mean, like a week or so ago, we were saying, you know, they are fourth is very much in their own hands. They're in a really good position. They can go a long way clear, actually, of, you know, West Ham, United, and Arsenal if they win those games. They play Arsenal if they beat them. And Arsenal, you know, in a pretty ropey state now with injuries and unavailabilities. They beat them. They're a point ahead of them with two games in hand. They haven't played any league games since then. All that's happened is they've lost 3-0 on aggregate to a team that are the champions of Europe and are far, far better than them. Their bench last night would have walked into the Spurs team mainly. That's all that's happened. And I know it's so shit losing, getting just like swatted away by a team that should be a rival, but Chelsea aren't a rival right now. That is the painful reality. But the teams that actually are rivals of them are similarly limited as Spurs. They're similarly not very good in a grander sense. And Spurs can have what would have been a dream season at the start of the season, and certainly when Nuno was sacked in October. If they beat teams at their level, games against Chelsea aren't going to define their season. They can get battered at the Etihad, battered at Anfield, which on the evidence of last night is quite likely to happen, and it won't actually make that much of a difference. And that's painful, because a few years ago, Spurs were beating teams like Chelsea, but they're just not at their level right now. And these two games don't really change that. So I think if you think Conte is the man, and let's not forget, a week or so ago, we couldn't get enough of Antonio Conte. I don't think losing these two games 3-0 on aggregate really changed all that much.
No, I would agree with that. But I worry about, well, as Danny alluded to, I worry about some of the sort of sulking that's happened in the last few days and what that really says. Because despite some of the sort of optimism I've seen on Twitter in the last 12 hours about him forcing Levy's arm or forcing Joe Lewis's arm, this is not my first rodeo, and that is not going to happen.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I've been through January transfer windows where this kind of thing has happened before. I mean, maybe not since Harry Redknapp, maybe AVB, but I really, really do not think that he's going to look at that, as you say, Charlie, look at a game against the European champions and say, maybe we should go out and sign 3 or 4 players in the next 2 weeks.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, welcome back to The View from the Lane, the voices you're hearing are me, Danny Kelly, and from The Athletic, James Moore and Charlie Eccleshare. The Carabao Cup recedes into the dim and dusty distance of memory, and we find ourselves once again in the here and now in the transfer window. Let's talk about this meeting. I know there was a meeting, and first of all, there was a meeting at some stage between Daniel Levy and Joe Lewis, the ultimate owner of Tottenham Hotspur, and then there's been since then another meeting, which was referred to by the manager, between Paratici, Levy, and Antonio Conte himself. Can you tell us about the meetings and what may have happened at the meetings?
Well, I think from what I understand, it was a frank exchanging of views, very honest conversation that Conte felt had gone well. You know, he said he wasn't going to sugarcoat things. He laid it out as he saw, and that basically involves bringing in quite a few new players. I mean, he clearly thinks there are some pretty big issues with this Spurs team that most people who watch Spurs would probably agree with. But whether that's going to convince... I mean, Daniel Levy and the Spurs hierarchy were pretty clear with Conte when he was appointed about, you know, the financial limitations there would be. And, you know, this window, what I've always been told is, yeah, there's probably scope to bring one, maybe two players in, but largely, you know, there's going to have to be a lot of trading. And it's interesting, actually, because it was pointed out to me that if you look, even at their summer business, there were a lot of loans, a lot of trades. There weren't actually many deals that were just a kind of conventional, right, here's some cash. I mean, Romero, obviously, we think of the big one, but that was actually a loan.
Yeah, it's Emerson Royale was actually the big one.
Emerson Royale was the big one. And Barcelona laughing all the way to the bank. Though I think he's been fine. I just think he's not suited to being a wing-back. He's a full-back. But anyway, that's to digress. So, they have this exchange of views. Conte made clear what he wants. And as he said fairly pointedly in his press conference on Tuesday, now it's up to the club. You know, it's out of my hands. Put up or shut up slightly. I mean, obviously he didn't say that. It wasn't that strong. But he, you know, he wants them to go and give him what he feels this team needs. But like I said last week, was it last week or on... Oh, it was on the pod early this week. Like, I think he always felt, like most of us do, that even though he'd been told this was the situation, even though, as James says, many other Spurs managers have had this situation, I think he felt exceptional and different. And that, yeah, okay, I know that there's... You're saying there's no money. I know that every other manager has dealt with this, but surely for me, you know, you'll find a way. And this was very similar to January 2020 when Mourinho had the same feeling, really. And that window, they did actually buy Bergwijn and loaned in the great Jedson Fernandez. But if you remember, it was when Kane was injured and everyone was obsessed with this idea that they absolutely had to bring in a striker for the rest of the season. And again, similarly, we kept thinking, well, surely this game where, you know, they've drawn 0-0 at Watford and have shown how desperate they are that they need a striker, that'll convince the Spurs hierarchy to act. And guess what? It didn't. So yeah, there's been this meeting. They've laid out on the line all what they want. Levy and Paratici are aware of what Conte wants, whether they can do that. The problem is, whether they can do it is largely dependent on can they shift Eddie? Can they shift Ndombele? Is Bergwijn going to go? That's the thing. It's not like Conte being at Chelsea, and not that that ended well, but where he can say to Abramovich, look, these are the players I want, go and get them, and it's in Chelsea's hands. This isn't entirely in Spurs' hands, because it's like being in a chain when buying a house.
Sure.
You're slightly at the mercy of others. And the problem is, Spurs have, you know, a lot of clubs don't especially enjoy dealing with them. We know that. They also have had a pretty rich history in the last few years of overvaluing their players and scaring potential buyers off. And they've got a problem because often when these fringe players play, they're playing in these scratch teams in the Conference League or the FA Cup where Spurs look completely hopeless. So it's challenging. And I think to get rid of some of these players, they're going to have to make some pretty big compromises. And is Daniel Levy going to want to do that? Not sure.
What's the alternative, James? Well, I think that was a very fair summation of the situation by Charlie. So are we just stuck then with unhappy manager who doesn't think the squad is sufficient for even his genius, and an owner who says, well, I'll get another manager sooner or later down the line, probably Michael Dawson?
You've got to start pushing that.
I'm trying to put a smile on your incredibly miserable physog.
That is the worry, isn't it? That it isn't going to work with a manager like Conte, much as it didn't work with Mourinho once he realised he couldn't spend a load of money. And it did work with Pochettino, who I would say is a coach with a sort of broader and longer term view.
And I think still have a point to prove.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, like I say, that's kind of my biggest concern with Conte, like in the sort of medium term, because I just don't think there is a long term with Conte at any club. That he isn't the kind of guy who's going to knuckle down and think, right, okay, or this, and he has improved players in the time he's been at the club in terms of their performances. I don't think anyone can argue that, but I don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to look to develop players in the way that Pochettino did with people like Walker and Rose, who just looked completely done when he turned up and then were the two best fullbacks in the league for a season. I mean, I just can't really see any solution to that isn't going to involve a long wait for a better football team. Because, you know, Levy and it is Joe Lewis rather than Levy. We shouldn't forget that. You know, he is the guy who has the money, who has the scope to kind of get the team out of this tailspin. Unless there's a complete changing of ways there, I don't really see that there's like a quick or easy fix. I don't think any manager is going to be a quick fix. I think if we thought that 2 months ago, then I would say the last sort of month has completely obliterated that notion.
Well, it certainly has done for the manager himself.
Because if Conte can't do it, like, what are you going to do? Then you're going to, what, is it going to be Klopp or Guardiola? I mean, there's not like many other options you can go for like the immediate fix, right? You tried Mourinho and it hasn't worked. You tried Conte, and my instinct, and obviously it's very early on, is that without spending money, it's not going to improve things massively. And you know, Charlie's right with what he says. You know, they could still get top four this season. That wouldn't be ludicrous.
We'll know more about that after the weekend.
If they finish fourth, right, and they're in the Champions League next season, and they're combining Champions League and the Premier League, and we know the thing that people always say about Conte or Conte's Chelsea was that they won the league in that first season because they weren't in Europe at all. Like, how is that? With what would be a much worse squad, this Spurs squad, than the Chelsea squad he had in 2016-17, how would he balance those two things out? Like, and we know from experience of the last two times Spurs have broken into the Champions League in 2010 and 2016, they didn't go out and spend loads of money in either of those two summers just because they suddenly got into the Champions League. It didn't happen. And it wouldn't happen this time either. They're not going to go out and spend £150 million on players this summer if they qualify for the Champions League. Yeah, I don't really see that there's going to be like a quick solution. I think that the best solution is probably going to be people getting over the idea that this is going to be fixed in the space of like 2 or 3 months or even two. I mean, and Conte said it himself. You know, it's not going to be fixed within 2 or 3 transfer windows, probably either.
I do want to move on to the North London Derby. People haven't got infinite jogging time for these podcasts. Can you give us any actual news on Bergwijn or Delhi or Lloris's contract or anybody that they're genuinely poking with a stick to try and get into the building?
So Lloris, I reported yesterday, he wants to stay and you know, they're currently negotiating and all parties want that to happen. So I think it will happen. They're just finalising the details.
Good.
So yeah, that's good news. I mean, one of the things is the length of contract that I think is quite interesting, and we'll see what happens there. You know, you typically think players of that age want a longer contract so they have more stability, but there's, you know, some have speculated that he might be happy with a year to sort of do the year and then see what's going to happen, given that, you know, there has been a lot of turbulence at Spurs. Delhi, they want a shift. No one's coming in for him. You know, there have been a few Premier League clubs that they hoped might step up, Everton being one of them, but as it stands, nothing concrete. Bergwijn, Ajax have come in for an offer, which Spurs have deemed unacceptable. As it stands, Ajax aren't showing an inclination to go higher, so either they will or Spurs are going to have to compromise on that one. And Ndombele, again, they're trying to get rid of, but as it stands, no major movements there. Traore is the one that there's confidence will happen. And
great.
Yeah, I know that's underwhelming to some, but yeah, I think that will. But it may.
How underwhelmed are you, James?
Me? What, with the idea that they're going to sign a forward and try and play him at right wing back up position he's never played before?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that probably says how enthusiastic I am about it.
Uh-huh. People unfortunately can't see your face, but yes.
I'm sure they can imagine.
someone needs to tell James about Victor Moses, the lesser-known tale of Victor Moses' transformation.
Yes. Great.
We got there.
Hello, I'm Adam Hurry, host of Football Clichés, a truly unique podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Twice a week, my guests and I tear apart the language of football, the words, the phrases, the mannerisms, and the weird habits of everyone involved in the game. From the shoes that football pundits are legally required to wear, to the didn't play for Sam Allardyce's Bolton but really should have done 11, Football Clichés explores all the tiny things that you didn't realise you cared about, but believe me, you do.
Okay, everybody, the Chelsea games, it's the nature of life. We cannot go back, except in strange American films, and do anything about what's happened in the past. We have to. And I'm not going to say we go again, because that assumed you goed in the first place. And I didn't see anybody going in the first place during those two games. But they have to play an incredibly important North London derby. As Charlie's already pointed out, it could put Spurs give them the whip hand at least over one of their London rivals for fourth place in the Premier League. What sort of team do you want to see, James, and what sort of team do you think you'll
should
see?
Should Gallini keep his place?
That is really the big
question. Well, we know Lloris is playing outfield. We know that because they had to save his energy, didn't they?
I mean, I suppose the team I'd like to see is going to be determined entirely by the injuries, I guess. Obviously, Dyer among them. I mean, we've seen this suggestion. I know Romero's name was mentioned before the game last night, Charlie. I don't know whether you think there's any possibility he might be back. I know it's kind of been alluded to that he's been back in proper training this week.
Yeah, I've long felt that this game could be the one he comes back for, just because it feels so perfect for him. A kind of half-fit Romero in a North London derby will be...
He's got to get himself back ready for the international break, right?
At the end of the month, so. Exactly, there's that.
Obviously, if Dyer and Romero are back, then actually you've got a sort of selection decision with who plays alongside those two, with Sanchez and Davis, I guess.
It's got to be Davis, isn't it?
Probably assume Tanganga wouldn't play.
Yeah,
and then I would.
No, he's got to get himself ready. He'd be packing his bags for Roma, won't he?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, I would probably go Wink Skip, but I suspect Conte would play Højbjerg, and then. Sorry, I'm just asking Charlie for the team he's. Reguilón, is he out properly or is he back?
He's got a hamstring issue. Yeah, he's had it's like an ongoing issue that needs to be managed. I suspect it was being managed in advance of Sunday. So I think he's one I'd feel hopeful will be able to play. Bergwijn is meant to be back proper training these days leading up to the Arsenal game. So again, he's someone who could come in, which they do need with Son out.
You think they'll play three up front rather than two as last night?
Don't know. I mean, it depends on availability. I think if Bergwijn's available, they might revert to the 3-4-3 so they can have him and Mora either side of Kane.
In some ways, it's good that Jack isn't here to discuss Lo Celso's big breakthrough last night.
Some of his corners are actually quite good, particularly in the first half.
Maybe we could become like American football. We could have specialist corner takers.
He just spent the last 2 months just doing corners in training and nothing else.
Which would make sense because his last contribution was that Everton game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe he just spent the entire time just working out how to beat the first man. But genuinely, I thought he took some quite good corners last night.
He was actually fine. But yeah, I think his last contribution genuinely pretty much was that Lo Celso, corner.
Are you having a laugh?
What?
He was fine. Lo Celso.
I mean, by the standards of the tee, I don't think he was the problem.
He's a problem.
He wasn't the solution either.
I don't think last night he was any worse than anyone else. I thought he actually started the game quite brightly.
He was worse than Kane.
Yeah, all right.
He was worse than Kane.
Okay.
Probably worse than
Kane. I don't think he was the issue. I think he was... I'd give him a sort of as solid a rating as most of those players.
You see more of them than perhaps I do in the flesh, because obviously I sometimes absent myself when Arsenal are playing. What kind of nick are Arsenal in, Charlie?
Well, if this had been a couple of weeks ago, you'd be feeling quite fearful because they were playing really well then. But they've got a bunch of players at AFCON, bunch of players injured, COVID issues. So I think I wouldn't be too... I mean, we're recording this as well before Thursday night, but they go to Anfield, so Spurs get the extra day's rest. I don't know what sort of team Liverpool put out, but Arsenal could be coming in off a hammering, especially given the team they might have to put out tonight. So I think it'll be two teams with various issues. But this is what I was going to say as well. I can understand the sort of the frustration and the doom and gloom, but if Spurs win this game, which they very well might, that will just transform things.
Does feel like a pivotal moment in the season.
Yeah.
And even if they lost, by the way, like you were saying before, they'd be, 4 points behind with two games in hand, right? So even if they lost this game, that
five
wouldn't be like
off,
an insurmountable... Yeah. 5.5. That wouldn't be like an insurmountable distance behind. I know it's obviously better to win that kind of game.
But it's also to pretend that West Ham don't exist.
West Ham, exactly, yeah. Sneaking that game in last night, I think, by the way, I think that was unfair. You shouldn't be allowed to just sneak in a home game against Norwich when other teams are playing cup games.
Unbelievable, yeah. It seems
a bit underhand to me.
I'd forgotten that game was
going
on.
And it shouldn't be worth 3 points. A win over Norwich should only be 1 point these days, shouldn't it?
Yeah. But this is the thing, if Spurs win that game, they'll have won the North London derby, so everyone would be delighted. Conte would have won six, drawn three of his nine league games. I don't think it's as sort of disastrous. I am a bit surprised that at the anti-Conte thing. And you know, in a couple of weeks, January will be over. We won't have to have these interminable questions about transfers and who's coming in, who's coming out. And he can actually get on with the job. And there'll be no point him kind of making coded messages to the board. Like, I don't think it's as, I think a lot, put it this way, a lot of my friends who support other teams are very, very envious of Conte when they look at the crap managers they've had. Yeah, he's not perfect, and yeah, he can be annoying with kind of his dourness and his moodiness, but what, like, who do you want? Like, honestly, like, you're saying get rid of Conte. Who do you want to manage Spurs?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, well, Danny wants Michael Dawson.
But only if Conte decides to walk himself. I'm not for getting rid of Conte at this moment.
Should just say, by the way, and I know there'll be a lot of people listening to this podcast, but I mean, I'm sure there aren't many people that genuinely want Conte gone, even me.
No.
And I'm sure there will be some people thinking, well, I would take Pochettino back probably. Pochettino would have been that game as well. Pochettino had been so many...
Yes, he did.
FA Cup semi-final against Man United where he played Vorming goal. The number of times he bins domestic cups. So if you're unhappy that Conte bin that game last night, the solution should not be to bring in Pochettino.
If you want a manager to take his cup seriously, Jose Mourinho.
And he's very likely to be available soon as well.
Yeah, I've checked while we've been recording this, and he did play Lloris against Brentford in the League Cup semi-final last season. Hart didn't play, Lloris played.
Exactly, so got them to the League Cup semi-final. He was undefeated in the League Cup last season.
Yeah.
We're pinning a lot of our hopes, it does seem to me, as so
But
often,
who would you want, Jay? Seriously, if you think Conte is sort of making these horrific... Like, who is the solution? Because you're kind of burned through a lot of managers.
Yeah, Ten Hag.
Ten Hag, yeah, okay.
A project manager, like a longer term. I'm not saying he's a better manager than Conte. It's a completely different thing.
It is. But then
he'll come and do something that upsets everyone. I mean, Pochettino, the best manager Spurs have had in modern times. There's still a lot of irritation with him over things like James says, that he played Vorm in a cup semi.
By the way, in that FA Cup semi-final in 2018, he played Vorm in goal, and also he didn't wear a suit. Think about that.
Listen, thank you both for your contributions to not quite a funeral march, but a pretty miserable outlook on a double-headed semi-final. Spurs perhaps might have always been losing, but I think, as always with human perception, it's how you lose rather than the actual fact of the defeat. Chelsea are a really good team. There, I've said it. Thank you both, as I say. And if you, the podcast subscriber, not already a subscriber to The Athletic, then you can read all of our articles on Spurs and everything else on the site by going to theathletic.com/SpursPod. And right now you can get 33% off a full subscription. We'll be back on Monday. Thank you for listening.
The Athletic.